Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn the meeting over to Kathy Paikon of the National Kidney Foundation. Thank you. You may begin.
On behalf of the National Kidney Foundation, welcome to Living Well with Immunosuppressive Medications, an interactive telephone forum for recipients, candidates, family, and friends. We chose this topic because you've let us know how important it is. First, our three panelists will speak. We have an exciting lineup today. Deborah Washington, kidney recipient from Maryland, Dr. Shirley Schlesinger, nephrologist from the University of Mississippi, and Dr. Dean Collier, clinical pharmacist from Nebraska. Save your comments and questions because after the presentations, we'll open the microphones for your thoughts and queries. The operator will explain how to do so. With great pleasure, I will now introduce Deborah Washington, a recipient of 10 years. She's a retired LPN from the military, and she volunteers at Walter Reed Medical Center and the Living Donor Assistance Center, the federally funded program that provides lodging and travel grants to potential living donors. Now, anything I mention today not on the topic that you want further information about, I'll provide my contact information at the end of the call. I am also proud to tell you about Deborah's volunteer work with the National Kidney Foundation. She chairs the 7,500-member Transaction Council, composed of recipients, family, friends, many of which you belong to. Transaction is under the NKF's umbrella of people like us and is an organization to encourage, educate, and empower people to be effective advocates for themselves and others. Deborah?
Yes. Good morning. I'd like to begin my presentation by quoting Dr. William J. Kauf, who invented the first dialysis machine in 1943. Quote, "The exciting thing is to see somebody who is doomed to die live and be happy." End of quote. My name is Deborah Washington, and I'm a kidney recipient. I was diagnosed with focal segmental glomerulosclerosis in 1986. My condition remained stable for nearly 10 years by following a low-protein, low-sodium diet and a variety of medication regimes. My nephrologist was straightforward in my future need for dialysis and eventual transplant. Hemodialysis became my treatment of choice. This was a very difficult time for me. Although I felt much better after the treatments, the hours, weeks, and months that I spent on the machine were filled with not only concerns about my health, but an array of emotional, financial, family, and personal issues. My options for a living donor were limited. Hypertension runs rampant throughout my entire family, and my dearest friends who wanted to donate were facing personal challenges that excluded them from donation. I came to the realization that in order for me to get off of the machine, someone would have to die. Prior to the surgery, a pharmacist introduced me to a list of medications along with an endless list of possible side effects. She highlighted the problems surrounding immunosuppression and the need to alter my lifestyle post-transplant. A psychiatrist questioned me about my ability to comply with the medication regime. I received my gift from a young man by the name of Kent Bird. He fell down a flight of stairs on Thanksgiving Day, 1997. During the time when his family was preparing to give thanks for all of their blessings, they found themselves in a position to bless someone else. Immediately after the surgery, I was given the assignment to learn and recognize the name, dose, time of administration, and adverse reactions of 8 different medications. Some meds had to be taken on an empty stomach, some with meals, some after meals, some once a day, twice a day, et cetera, and so on. I was also tasked with identifying the signs and symptoms of infection or rejection, monitoring my fluid intake and output, and recognizing when to contact my health care team with concerns. All of this was to be accomplished prior to discharge. In spite of it all, I was happy to be free of the dialysis machine and was willing to do whatever was necessary to remain dialysis free for as long as possible. My thoughts also turned to my donor family and the gift they so unselfishly offered. I began my 6-year quest to contact them and express my appreciation. for the majority of recipients today. In comparison to the physical changes of end-stage renal disease, the emotional roller coaster of dialysis, and the significant change in lifestyle, the side effects of our medications are quite tolerable. Fortunately, most of the unpleasant reactions can be treated successfully by adjusting the medication, changing the medication, or prescribing an additional medication to treat the symptoms. Many of us have been affected by weight gain, insomnia, acne, excessive hair growth in areas where there should be no hair, and loss or thinning of hair where there should be an abundance of it. Gastrointestinal disturbances range from diarrhea to constipation to acid reflux. Vision changes can sometimes be attributed to our age, and females have the advantage of attaching our mood swings to PMS or menopause. Another concern related to long-term steroid use is osteoporosis. Although the diet restrictions are no longer enforced, our cholesterol levels have a tendency to become elevated. We must avoid excessive intake of fatty foods and prepare meals that are loaded with vitamins, fruits, and vegetables. We do realize that some recipients will experience reactions that are severe, such as lymphoma, skin cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. My contact with numerous recipients throughout the United States leads me to feel that these patients are a part of the minority. Men may experience sexual dysfunction. Dr. Schlesinger will discuss this further during her presentation. Unusual signs and symptoms such as low-grade fever and tenderness at the graft site should be reported to the physician immediately. We must closely monitor the color, consistency, and odor of our urine. I personally have had problems with complicated urinary tract infections. Some have required hospitalization and treatment with IV antibiotics, and others have been treated with injections. Continuity of care is critical. Periodically, my physician orders several diagnostic procedures that are designed to detect changes throughout the body. They include, but are not limited to, pap smear, colorectal screening, a complete dermatology exam, eye exam, bone scan, a review of my immunization status, and a variety of lab work, and of course, urinalysis. Men should also include prostate exams and screening. All recipients with a significant family history should be examined more often. Prophylactic antibiotics should be administered prior to dental procedures. A compromised immune system places us at higher risk for opportunistic infections. We must protect ourselves from others who are ill. Surgical masks are wonderful for the cold and flu season, especially when surrounded by folks who fail to cover when coughing and sneezing. Those of us with small children or pets should be aware that they harbor a large amount of germs. Frequent hand washing and hand sanitizers are excellent for removal of harmful bacteria. Our greatest defense against the adverse reactions is our knowledge of the prescribed medications and the advantage of access to experienced professionals who are dedicated to maintaining the life of the transplanted organ. The ability to recognize changes in bodily functions, changes in our vision, and changes in our skin is imperative for early detection of potential problems. Today's recipients have the advantage of a superhighway of information via the Internet. In addition, the National Kidney Foundation is only a phone call away. With proper health care, consistent behavior regarding the medications, and overall awareness of kidney disease, we should find that the quality of our lives is definitely enhanced after transplantation. I feel comfortable in saying that compared to dialysis, taking a few pills is a pleasure. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Deborah. Now, every recipient is unique, and we're so happy to hear of Deborah's experience and what she has learned and willing to share. And we know that recipients run the gamut of all kinds of experiences, and nothing will take the place of your one-on-one with your own doctor, but this is a great start. With great pleasure now, I'm going to introduce to you Dr. Shirley Schlesinger, a nephrologist who takes care of recipients at the University of Mississippi in Jackson. She's been the medical editor of Transplant Chronicles, a newsletter that NKF puts out that has just gone into an electronic format. And if you don't receive it, I hope you'll email me or contact me at the end of this call so I can sign you up. She has a particular interest in how transplant recipients can manage the side effects of immunosuppression well. And in a few hours, there'll be a slide PowerPoint that kind of gives an overview of what she's going to talk about today, placed on the transaction website, www.transplantrecipients.org, that you can refer to. Without further ado, I'm delighted to introduce Dr. Schlesinger.
Thank you, Kathy. And Deborah, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. I'm going to take a few minutes to expand a little bit on some of the things that Deborah mentioned and try and give you a framework for thinking about the types of side effects that you might be experiencing or might experience in the future when you get a transplant. And then I want to talk a little bit about managing those side effects and the importance especially of sharing all of your issues with your transplant healthcare professionals. I like to think of sort of the side effects or adverse outcomes of your medications in two really sort of very broad categories. One of those could be termed kind of an extension of the therapeutic effect of the anti-rejection medications. You're placed on those medicines specifically for immunosuppression purposes to prevent rejection of your allografts. And unfortunately, prevention of rejection and immunosuppression along with that also immunosuppresses you in other ways. All patients who have transplants are at risk for this extension of the therapeutic effect. These types of side effects tend to be very much dose related, and as we try to handle these or treat the side effects, we have to consider what we call the net immunosuppression of each individual patient. And that helps us to determine your risk for these kinds of problems and how to manage them. And I'll talk a little bit more about those in a minute. The other type of sort of medication fallout, the other category, is what I would refer to as true side effects of medicines. These are much less predictable. They tend to be different and unique for each individual patient. And yes, although they may be dose-related or timing of medication-related, they aren't always, and so sometimes these types of side effects are somewhat more difficult to manage, although in almost all cases, if you share your issues with your physician, they'll be able to help you with these things. Let's talk first in a little bit more detail about the sort of over-immunosuppression aspects of your medications. There are two big categories of diseases that we deal with there. The first is malignancy, the opportunistic cancer-type problems we see after transplant. Transplant patients aren't at risk, greater risk for all types of cancers, but you do increase your risk for some types of cancers after you get a transplant. Mostly has to do with the fact that your body on immunosuppressive meds is not able to screen for types of viruses and things that can trigger overgrowth of tissues and the development of cancers. We specifically worry a lot about skin cancers. Deborah mentioned being certain that you have regular dermatologic assessments and skin examinations, and that is so very important. Because although your risk is greatly increased, these are definitely things that can be addressed. A good dermatologist or plastic surgeon can monitor you on an ongoing basis and completely take care of this problem. You're at increased risk for lip and mouth cancers. Women are at greatly increased risk for cervical cancers, particularly if you have papillomavirus or herpes viruses. There's some increased risk for some types of blood and lymph node cancers, such as lymphoma or leukemia. Kidney transplant patients have an increased risk for renal cell carcinomas or kidney cancers. All of these are diseases that are completely curable with early recognition, and so it's very important that if you notice any lumps or bumps growing anywhere, that you let your doctor know about them early. Usually they're going to be nothing, but if they are something and they're found early, they can be addressed without any problem. Regular recommended screenings are so important, and Deborah mentioned having your pelvic and your pap smears, your regular lab work, all of those kinds of things can help prevent all of this. The second area under over-immunosuppression type side effects is the issue of infection. And actually, transplant patients, kidney transplant patients, don't really have more infections than dialysis patients do. They just tend to have different infections. So on dialysis, you tend to get peritonitis if you're doing TV, or you might get a vascular access infection or a line infection if you're doing hemodialysis. Those are usually bacterial infections. After transplant, the immunosuppressive medicines prevent your body's ability to screen and destroy funguses and viruses as well as it would if it were completely healthy. And so you're a little more risk for odd types of infections. The good news is that there are great drugs these days to treat those infections, and as long as they are recognized early, they generally can be completely cured. All of these types of complications are relatively rare, especially the cancers, but the infections as well. Immediately after transplant, at the time period where you are most intensely immunosuppressed, you'll actually be given medication to try and prevent any of these types of infections from occurring. And most patients are on an antiviral medication such as acyclovir or ganciclovir or valganciclovir, oftentimes on an antifungal drug such as fluconazole or nystatin. And these are being given to prevent the development of these types of infections. One caveat now, remember that even the medicines to prevent problems can have side effects. So the more medicines we give you, the more chances are that you'll have some other side effects. I want to move from talking about those extension of immunosuppression issues to talking a little bit about what I would refer to as true side effects. You'll remember I said these are going to be unique to each individual, and I tell my patients that I'm evaluating as potential transplant recipients, I give them the long list of medications and side effects that Deborah referred to she had gotten free transplant. And I always tell my patients, you're not going to get all of these, but I can guarantee you that you're going to get at least a few of them, because every patient I've ever had pretty much gets at least something, even if it's just weight gain. These, again, can sort of be thought of in categories of problems. I always start with talking about metabolic-type side effects, and the primary one of these is weight gain. The average weight gain in our patients here in Mississippi after kidney transplant is about 35 pounds. And some of our patients can stand to gain 35 pounds. Some are a little obese to start with, and that can be a real problem. We also see an increased risk for the development of diabetes. This is particularly an increased risk if you have a family history of diabetes. I tell my patients that required insulin or oral medications for diabetes before they get a transplant. With dialysis, sometimes you no longer need those medicines, but once you get a transplant, you almost certainly will require those medications again. You can do things to lower your risk for the development of diabetes, particularly around weight gain, diet, and exercise. We also see changes in cardiovascular issues as a side effect. Many patients will have high blood pressure. Some of them will develop high blood pressure after transplant that didn't have it beforehand, and it is likely a side effect of the medication. Deborah mentioned cholesterol, and several of the medications, especially the prednisone, can contribute significantly to an increase in your cholesterol and triglyceride levels. We actually reduce your risk for heart attack and stroke with a transplant over remaining on dialysis. But it's still important to treat both high blood pressure and cholesterol because the treatment will further lower your risk. Lots of patients have cosmetic side effects, and Deborah mentioned hair loss and actually hair growth, and that's relatively common. Usually dose adjustment is going to be the thing that's going to help that the most. In some cases, we actually change from one type of immunosuppressive medicine to another to try and address that issue. If you're on cyclosporin or Neoral or one of the other cyclosporin formulations, you likely will see hair growth places you'd rather not have it. If you're on a tacrolimus or Prograf-based regimen, you're more likely to see hair loss. And actually changing from one of those to the other can sometimes fix that problem. Lots of patients have skin changes. Early on high doses of prednisone, many patients experience acne. I have patients tell me all the time, I feel like I'm a 15-year-old adolescent again, but that usually gets much better as we reduce the level of the dosage of the medication. Many patients get chipmunk cheeks. Again, very much dose-related, it usually gets better. Bone and joint diseases are very common, partly as side effects of your medications. It is very important that people exercise regularly and take good care of their joints. There's an increased risk for gout. Certainly patients who've had gout before they developed end-stage organ disease and required a transplant are more likely to experience more problems with that afterwards. Again, there are good medicines that can help control that. Sometimes dietary changes can assist as well. Gastrointestinal problems are very common after transplant related to the medication. I would say diarrhea and abdominal cramping after weight gain are probably my most common side effects that I see in our patients. Again, usually these are things that are not related to an infectious process, but actually to the medicines themselves, and by adjusting them, we can make all of that better. Many patients experience psychological and quality of life side effects. A lot of it's just anxiety. People are excited about their transplant. They want it to work. They are very committed to taking excellent care of themselves and their organ, and they worry constantly about if they are exposed to something bad or if they drink some alcohol or whatever, is this going to hurt their kidney? And it's important to talk to your healthcare professionals about that. The whole purpose of getting a transplant is to live as normal a life as possible. And yes, you want to take good care of yourself, but you want to have an active, busy life, and you want to not be overcome by anxiety or worry. I do have patients that have insomnia that's directly related to the medication sometimes, and again, adjusting dosages can make a huge difference with that. Sexual dysfunction is not uncommon after transplant, although I'll tell you with kidney transplant patients, I usually have less erectile dysfunction after transplant, less problems with that than on dialysis. I sometimes have spouses complain about increased activity. Again, if that's a problem, that is something that almost always your physician can help you address. There are lots of other side effects that I'm not talking about in detail because they're somewhat less common, but anything that you experience that is impacting your ability to live an active, healthy life the way you want to is something you ought to talk to your doc about. I want to spend a couple minutes talking in a little bit more detail about the weight gain because I feel very strongly that this is something that we can really empower our patients to get under control and take care of themselves. Prednisone definitely stimulates appetite, and for dialysis patients especially, you are going to be a lot hungrier after your transplant. Food is going to taste a lot better to you, which makes you want to eat even more of it, and you're going to have reduced dietary restrictions. So patients who have been so careful not to eat cheese or milk or to drink extra fluids, all of a sudden, you can eat those foods. Oftentimes, we're encouraging you to eat extra of those foods. Unfortunately, many of them have high calories. So it's critically important that you work closely with a dietitian and with your doc and other healthcare professionals to get on a good diet that's going to be heart healthy and it's going to control your weight from the outset. Oftentimes, patients coming to transplant, not just kidney, but heart and liver and lung transplants as well, will have deconditioned muscles from their chronic end-stage organ disease, and so it's very hard for them to exercise as actively as they might like. It's very important after the transplant to get back slowly but steadily into good exercise habits and moving around. Pre-transplant preparation with good exercise and eating habits will really help you as you get to transplant and post-transplant in trying to prevent weight gain. The other thing about weight gain is that it impacts so much many other side effects. If you don't gain a lot of weight, you're going to be less likely to get diabetes. You're going to be less likely to have joint problems. You'll actually even have fewer GI problems if you don't gain a lot of weight. So I encourage people to be very aware of this potential and to work hard up front at trying to prevent the development of a lot of extra body fat. In closing, I want to talk a little bit about coping with your side effects, and I want to just tell you again, if the single thing you take home from my chat with you today is to talk to your healthcare professionals, that'd be the most important thing. So often we can change your dosage schedule around or maybe the amount of the medicines you're taking or potentially even switch you completely to a different type of medicine, and it'll make all the difference in the world. If your life is being compromised by your side effects, please talk to somebody. A lot of times lifestyle changes can help, exercising, dieting, getting busy. If you're anxious and depressed, getting focused on other folks and volunteering, getting involved with other transplant patients, other activities in your community can really help. Sometimes physical therapy can make a difference. Counseling can make a difference. Again, just talking with other folks, including other recipients, can help you cope with whatever experience, whatever kinds of problems you're experiencing. And as a last resort, sometimes we have to give you more pills to help with the problems you're having from the pills you're on. And I hate to say that, but a lot of times a new medication can make a difference. I'll tell you that as I work with my patients, I always try to let that be the last resort because I do realize that it can be pretty unpleasant to take as many medications as many of our patients have to do. So finally, take-home messages. No one gets all the side effects, but almost everyone is going to get some side effects. I'll tell you that all my patients say the side effects are still worth the transplant. I have never had a patient that I have taken care of that has ultimately lost their transplant and gone back on dialysis, that as they're losing function or once they're back on dialysis, one of the first questions they ask me is, "Doc, when can I get on the list to get another transplant?" Or, "Doc, I have a wife or a friend or a family member that wants to give me a transplant. Can I get another one?" And that's even the people who've had the worst side effects. So I'm convinced that the transplant is always worth it. And finally, don't ever suffer in silence. We can help, but you've got to tell someone. Thank y'all for the opportunity to talk.
Thank you so much, Dr. Schlesinger. And the last point just reminds me of a recipient that told us he suffered in silence for a long time with gout because he couldn't figure, it never occurred to him that gout in the feet could be related to kidneys in the stomach area. But from your message points and from Deborah's before talk, mention it, you can manage it. And now, with great pleasure, I'm going to introduce you to Dean Collier, our final speaker, who's a clinical pharmacist at the University of Nebraska Liver and Intestinal Transplant Program. Dean is the pharmacy editor of Transplant Chronicles, and this issue that was just released actually yesterday and is still coming out today has two articles on this topic about side effects, one written by a physician and one written by a recipient. And if you're not signed up to get it, do contact me and I'll sign you up. Now, I'm particularly happy that Dean could join us today because he's been very busy volunteering with a medical mission, going to other countries with doctors and nurses to help people less fortunate, and a job dear to NKF's heart since he's been volunteering at the Special Olympics. NKF is gearing up to have the U.S. Transplant Games Olympic-style events in Pittsburgh starting in less than a month. And I think that many of our attendees at today's conference know about it, but for further information, you can contact me later. Without further ado, with great pleasure, I give you Dean.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you very much. I'd like to begin by sharing with everyone parts of a letter I received from a transplant recipient. This letter was sent to me in response to a survey of transplant recipients that a colleague and I had developed. We designed this anonymous survey to gather information that would help pharmacists and other healthcare providers better understand medication self-management needs of transplant recipients. If we, your healthcare providers, better understand the concerns and the struggles of day-to-day life for the transplant recipient, we might be more able to help. Our thought was to improve existing programs or design new programs that would assist with self-management of immune suppression. To get to this information, we included in the survey a number of questions that were centered on taking immune suppressive medicines. The questions had been previously used by another researcher, Dr. Marie Chisholm from the University of Georgia. Some examples of the questions are, "I have to take the immune suppressant medications too many times per day." And then the survey responder would answer, "I strongly agree, I agree," or "have no opinion, disagree," etc. Another question, "I have to take too many capsules of my immune suppressant medications. I do not understand when to take my immune suppressant medications. I miss a dose of my immune suppressant medication when I think there may be side effects." Well, back to the letter. After the survey had gone out, one recipient wrote back and was really very offended by the content of the survey. And I'll quote from the letter that was written. Evidently, there must be enough transplant patients out there who are not taking their medications as prescribed. These individuals should not have been given the opportunity to have a transplant, a second chance at life. Do you get it? Compared to spending 3 days a week on dialysis, taking a few pills every day is nothing. There was obviously some very strong emotion in this letter. I imagine the message, if not the sentiment, is one that many of our transplant recipients have heard, or at least thought they may have heard from doctors or pharmacists or perhaps their peers and friends. Shame on you for not taking your medicine, right? As a younger pharmacist working with transplant recipients, I was probably equally as naive of the challenge of taking immune suppressive medicines as many of you may be now. I thought, after such a transformation in health, how could anyone not take their medicines? As a more mature pharmacist, I've learned that very few people easily choose not to take their medicines. Rather, living well on immune suppressive medications is a constant struggle. I was reminded of this again while reading a soon-to-be-published booklet that was written by a group of transplant recipients. And I encourage all of you to read this booklet when it becomes available. It's entitled Living Well on Immune Suppressive Medications, and it'll be out later in July. I think my take-home message is, let's all move past the blaming and shame and try to truly understand what a tremendous effort it is to take so many medications after transplantation. Let's recognize this effort as one of the hardest parts about transplantation, and let's work together to find ways to overcome the problems. Anyone who takes medications on a continual basis will inevitably miss doses. The more medications one takes, the more challenging it becomes to be perfect. Recall the medication-related problems that you've just heard about from Deborah and Dr. Schlesinger. Yet for the best results, perfection in taking those medications should still be our target. If you're a transplant recipient, you don't have to do this alone. And you heard that from Dr. Schlesinger, and I'll reinforce it. You are part of a team. A very key part of any team is working together. As a pharmacist, I want your help in managing your immune suppressive medications. I need your help. I know the technical stuff. I went to school for a lot of years to learn those things. I know the usual doses of these medicines. I know the usual desired effects, and I know the usual unwanted effects that are possible for each one of these medicines. But without good, objective, and specific communication from you, the patient, I'm less able to provide the best care possible for you. If I don't know what hurts, if I don't know what aches, I can't help you. I can't make the changes that might help you. Because of this, I'll echo what Dr. Schlesinger said. I want to encourage all of you to find your voice. Communicate with the team your experiences with the medications that you are taking. As I said, taking so many medications is definitely one of the hardest parts about having a transplant. To do this well, to be successful, we need to work as a team. Thank you very much for listening. And I think, Kathy, we'll take any questions now.
We sure will. And before I ask the operator to tell you how to do so,